Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. Thanks for being with us and thanks for sharing part of your morning with us. We are most grateful to you for that. My friends, there is so much to talk about. Rex Hupke and I co-host a podcast here on WGNRadio.com, and where we talk about politics once a week. And honestly, we can't keep up because there's just so much to talk about every time we look up. I think we could probably do a podcast every 3 hours and still not be caught up.
We are just hamsters on a wheel. That is
we
all.
Hamsters on a wheel. You know, we have both been in this racket for a while, and I think we can agree that it has been a very different beast this election cycle.
Historically hideous, I would call it.
Well, we welcome your calls, 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about some of those things that have been going on just in the last day or so, because really, I feel like yesterday was a pretty busy day in the political world, Rex.
It seemed that way, yes. There was much to talk about, as usual, and much to both kind of celebrate and be
and
extremely,
mourn.
Extremely scared about.
And mourn deeply. Well, so interestingly, about the same time yesterday, both midday, Donald Trump and Michelle Obama both delivered speeches that were very, very interesting, very, very different in tone. But before that, what we all woke up to yesterday was a really interesting back and forth with the New York Times, in which the Trump camp, the Trump lawyers, had asked for a retraction, a little correction, a little not so much. And New York Times wrote this letter and put it out very publicly and said, no. Yeah, basically said, nuh-uh, yeah. Signed to the New York Times. And they said, we will not be doing that, and we welcome, actually the last line of it, I don't have it in front of me, but the last line of it was so epic because it said something to the effect of like, and we welcome the opportunity, clearly you don't know how libel works, and we welcome the opportunity for the court system to explain that to you.
It should have ended with like three little flame emojis, really. Just to
which would have really set it apart. I mean, it's really been an interesting year. And I think, you know, the thing that's weighing on my heart and mind, the thing that just in the last few days I've been like, let's just vote already. I'm done. I'm tired. I think we all are.
Yeah, I never get the undecideds at this stage in an election, truthfully. But this year, I really, really don't get the undecideds. And we've seen the gentleman from the last debate, Ken Bone, who became famous because his name is Ken Bone, and he asked a question during the debate. And, you know, what? And good for him. I hope he makes lots of money and does well. But at the same time, how are you undecided, Ken Bone? I don't understand.
Well, that was the thing. There were several screen grabs that were being tweeted during the last debate, because as many know, if you were sitting right there by the candidates, you were an undecided voter. The people further back sitting behind the political families, they were not identifying as undecided. But the people right there on stage were declaring themselves undecided voters. There were several screen grabs that were tweeted during the debate. And I love to watch Twitter and Facebook during a live event because it's so entertaining, for better or worse. But there were lots of screen grabs of faces of people sitting there saying, the moment so-and-so decided, the moment so... Because it was these expressions like, what? Yeah. Like tilting the head, like a puppy, you know, when you're going outside, you want to go outside? And people are like... You know, tilting their heads.
They were
suddenly,
like, I'm sorry. What was that? What did he just say?
Or like, what did she
just say?
What did he? That, and you could see them making up their mind, which I suppose is the point of a debate. Is you're supposed to air the issues and do the things.
Of course, we'd like it if they were making up their mind based on policy things, as opposed to based on insults.
Personality,
yeah. And various insults being hurled back and forth.
You know, I know someone who did a really interesting thing. He's got. Middle school and early high school kids, and for the election, what he would do is he would print out stories and black out with a Sharpie, black out the name of the candidate and any pronouns, and they would read it at the dinner table and talk about it.
That's interesting.
Just so it was like, let's take personality out of this,
right,
and let's just consider what's being said here and see where that gets us.
I think if you did that this year, they'd still know who was talking.
at this point.
But I like that idea, though. Yeah. And that is, and that's what I feel like has been so lost in this election. It's been kind of lost probably for a while now, truthfully, but more so than ever in this election, we have lost any sense of what's the important policy here, who is actually preparing a better plan for this country, who is actually trying to help people, how are they trying to help people, how can I evaluate that and do a compare and contrast between the two. And that's because it's pretty much just, like you said, all personality based. It's all rhetoric. It's all based on in some cases, you know, decades old incidents and, mm-hmm. and things that are being questioned and swirled around. And it takes away that, which I think if you could do that with your kid, that's an incredibly valuable thing, because we all should be looking at our presidential candidates and doing
by
something
issues.
Like that. Yeah. And saying, wait,
who is least psycho today?
Right.
And that's
exactly.
kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
I think this practice started that my friend was doing during when we had a lot of people, you know, on the stage here,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
and it was looking like it could be any man's game. But now,
no.
Now it's quite clear. There are two really interesting things. One is an app called Countable. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It is really kind of a neat thing. It you follow topics. It's being called like Tinder for politics.
Oh, wow.
Which seems really
I wish I had that in just sort of in my day-to-day life, so I could swipe.
Counter for life, like sitting in a meeting, swipe,
yeah,
I'm done here.
Yes.
But it's Tinder for politics, and you follow topics. You can say, okay, the environment mm-hmm. and education policy or whatever is interesting, and you follow those topics, and it will alert you when anything at all is happening politically connected to those topics.
Oh, wow.
And so it'll say, for example, okay, hey, overnight this bill was proposed and it impacts the environment, and so you might be interested. And it lets you, when you look at it, it'll say why you might be in favor of it, why you might be opposed to it. And it breaks it down in a very nonpartisan way and lets you kind of, in a really like digestible, bite-sized kind of way, lets you say, here's the rub on this side, here's the rub on this side, why you might be for or against it. And then you hit yes or no, and it allows you to say why you think that. And the comments are surprisingly civilized.
I would imagine so, because most people would get to that and be like, I don't want facts. What are you doing? What is this nonsense? I mean, I have to read things?
Exactly. It's really interesting. I mean, yeah. And I at no point have I seen anybody doing the thing we're all guilty of as human beings, and that's arguing a fact.
Right.
Because that's well documented, you guys, right? That's well documented that even when presented with information that irrefutably counters something we're arguing, we mm-hmm. just can't, our brain can't, it's not even us, it's our brain. It's mm-hmm. not you, it's your brain. Our brain can't process that's possibly happening. So it'll be like, no, that can't be. But this, just the tone of it is so interesting because it really sets people up to have a very civilized conversation. I miss those.
That's horrible. I don't want to hear about any more
terribly.
Of that nonsense.
I know, you and your facts.
Yes.
But also,
it's really cool.
I encourage everybody to check out things like Ballotopedia.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ballot builders. There's some apps so that you can really look down ballot and understand candidate by candidate. You can build your own ballot based on what you like. I think that's really important.
There's so much that we don't understand. And I follow this stuff a lot and I include myself in this. I mean, every day I'm learning something new about some aspect of the electoral process or, like you said, something down ballot that's significant or where we stand in terms of state legislatures. You know, we focus especially this year on the presidential race only because that is just sucking up all the oxygen. But there is so much more to what we're going to be voting for on November 8th. Or as Trump said, November 28th.
Whichever.
Right. And what, you know, just the massive stuff that's out there that is important to our day-to-day lives.
Oh, it's true. It's true. There's so much. Well, we welcome your calls, comments, thoughts, questions, all the good stuff. 312-981-7200. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. We'll be checking in with them a little bit later at 1 o'clock. they will be, they're on a remote, but they'll be checking in. They'll be chatting with us there with the smell of pine all around them. It'll be good. But thank you for joining us right now. Glad to be with you. And thank you for sharing part of your morning with us. We have been talking about all the political stuff that's happening right now because, you know, every time we sneeze, we look up and the whole political, all the headlines have changed and gotten better or worse or crazier or weirder. Or I'm telling you, Rex, if we a year ago would have said, let's write a fictional story about the election, but make it the most ridiculous thing we can possibly think of. We couldn't have come close.
You know, I can't tell you how many times it's happened, at least a half dozen times over the past few months, where I've been writing a column and midway about Trump and something he did or said, and I've had to change because he did or said something that completely
changed the narrative.
That sort of obliterated the other thing that happened. So
it's
fast moving.
On the other side of the news, after 10:30, we're going to be talking with Heidi Stevens about how to talk to your kids about all this stuff, because I think we can all agree, no matter how you're voting, I think we can all agree that there are some things that have been said that where it's not necessarily okay and appropriate, or at least we're not sure if it's always okay and appropriate for our kids to watch the news with us at night, for our kids to look at the news stories that we're reading, because there's just a lot of things being said and there's a lot of stuff going on. So we're going to be talking with her a little bit after the news about how we can talk to our children about some of these things being said and these things that are in our headlines right now. Right before the break, we were talking about the importance of really making an effort to tune out personality and just look at issues. And let us agree, that's totally impossible. Right now, at this point,
yes.
It's not possible. We can't do it.
Far-fetched.
I know. Me and my dreams. But there was a really interesting piece that, you know that show Dirty Jobs? Mm-hmm. It's hosted by Mike Rowe. I think it's on CNN now. He basically goes to, like, he'll follow people that do jobs like cleaning sewers or like unearthing, like digging in the dirt to unearth artifacts and all these things where he's literally getting quite dirty. It's a very interesting show, and he's clearly a very, very smart guy. He wrote a fascinating thing. It was his answer to, he was asked, hey, will you tell everybody to be sure and go out and vote? And he gave an answer I haven't seen anyone else quite say, but he said, you know, I know a lot of celebrities use their platform to encourage people to go vote. He said, but you know what? I'm not going to say that because I don't want everyone to vote. I want people to be informed and then vote. Mm. I want people to be thoughtful. And I think the stakes are very high in this election, and I want people to vote. I don't want an emotional vote.
Right.
I want a fact-based, rational vote. And it was a long, very thoughtful answer that I think anyone on any side of the political spectrum can really appreciate. If you go and search on the interwebs, you'll find it. I thought it was really interesting, and I hadn't heard anyone say that, because usually celebrities mm-hmm. are usually going, you know, rock the vote, get out there and vote,
yeah,
do the vote,
right,
do the thing
any.
With the voting, or they're raising money for a particular candidate. In his case, he was just saying, hey, I want you to be informed. I want you to be smart about it. I want you to be thoughtful about it. I want you to see what all is at stake, and I want you to fill out your full ballot. Don't just president. I want you to go down ballot too.
Wow, that's outstanding. I completely agree with that. And I think you're right. There's a value to getting people involved in the process to whatever degree you can. And I think a lot of celebrities accomplish that by saying, get out and vote. And that's celebrities on both sides of the political aisle. It's not just, The View is that all celebrities are liberal, but I don't think that's
yeah, that's not true at all.
Completely true.
I think we've seen that in Scott Baio.
Yes, yes, Scott Baio.
Scott Baio.
And not all celebrities are celebrities either. But much offense intended, Mr. Baio.
Well,
I think that that's yeah. I mean that idea is so lost so much is that, you know, please get out there, do something.
Yeah.
You know, get your facts together and really consider it, because, you know, we are so polarized right now that it's vote for my person, you know, please.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
vote based on knowledge.
Well, I've talked about that many times, and I always bring up this book, but it was like life-changing to me. And it is the writing of George Lakoff, who wrote Don't Think of an Elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And it really changed my life, because his whole thing is about how we try to win arguments, but we just want people to think what we think instead of saying, hey, we clearly have different points of view, so we're coming at this from different places. Let's work together to find the common ground.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, getting into a debate is about finding space to hold the conversation. And I, I don't think many people are doing that. I think people are trying to, you know, trying to like recruit people to their side of things.
Yeah.
And that's why we're not. That's why Facebook makes my blood pressure go up.
Oh, right yeah. Now. It's really, that's just a mess. It makes a mess of things. For all the, you know, good it has done in some ways, it does just wreaks havoc on,
yeah,
on any sort of, like you said, trying to find a,
sure,
a middle ground or a space to talk.
Well, and speaking of social media, a thing happened yesterday that really put my blood pressure through the roof. And
oh,
that
yeah.
was Fox anchor Lou Dobbs tweeted the address and phone number of one of the Trump accusers. And he later apologized. But look, you can't unring a bell. At the end of the day, that's doxing. And that is the practice of putting someone's personal information out on the internet. And it's very dangerous. Think of that woman. Think of her now.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether or not, like, it doesn't matter the details of the case. It doesn't matter. There mm-hmm. are people that believe she should be punished. And her information is public now. And that's very dangerous. If I were her, I would be in hiding. That would be very scary.
Yes, it's terrible. And I don't think people recognize, you know, people have gotten so caught up online in sort of the fury of the moment and if many people are very passionate, and but they get to a point where they sort of start to think of themselves as, you know, some sort of like renegade, like they think they're accomplishing something. They're really going after someone, and they go after
yeah.
hard, and then they cross that line. And you know what? It's fine to criticize people, obviously.
That's fair game.
And it's fine
but when you're
to,
like trying to hurt people. It's
yeah,
fine.
Right. And when you do that, look, the bottom line is this. It's not to say all of anybody's supporters are nutso or dangerous, but some of everybody's supporters are nutso and dangerous. There's a certain
crazies
percentage.
Crazies everywhere, man.
Right, yeah, exactly. So doing something like that, you're quite literally putting somebody's safety in jeopardy. And,
oh, yeah.
And I think that is a despicable thing to do for anybody. But when you have someone like a person who's a high profile and
yeah.
has a huge number of followers like Lou Dobbs, even if it's an accident, man, you don't do that. That is just absolutely horrible. I don't, he apologized. I don't necessarily think he did it intentionally. Who knows? But it's so careless and so risky. And also beyond the danger it put that individual woman in, what does that do to other women out there? We're talking right now about sexual assault.
Right.
And women are coming forward bravely, I think, to talk about it. And it's fair to question, you know, the validity of claims to and what have you. And, you know, I understand
sure.
that. But to make any attempt to silence people,
yeah.
male, female, whatever, who've been assaulted, anybody.
It's going to prohibit other people from coming forward,
yeah,
potentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to go, gosh, I could have someone famous tweet my address and phone number. Is that even worth it?
Yeah, because that turns your life upside down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we got to take a break and get you news and all that good stuff. But we do have a little clip that we'll play for you a little later this hour from Keith Olbermann, who I tweeted this last night. He really... he gives quite a rant. It's a good one.
Yeah, you talk about unshackled. He is, and as much as Trump is unshackled, so is Olbermann nowadays.
Olbermann is yeah. not having it. I think what I tweeted was, well, Olbermann is not playing around with this.
Yeah.
And I think he you know, he makes some interesting points, but it's worth seeing. He's, of course, doing these reports for GQ.com. So,
mm-hmm.
my friends, let us take a break. Let us get you to news, all the good stuff. When we come back, we're talking about that. And we're talking with Heidi Stevens from Chicago Tribune all about how we talk to our kids when some of the headlines that our politicians are making are quite not so appropriate for kids. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. Thanks for being with us and sharing part of your morning with us. Most grateful to you for that. We have been talking about what else? The thing that everyone's talking about. We've been talking about the election because, oh man, I'm telling you, as many elections, Rex, as you and I have both been through in this industry, it seems like this one is just a busy one, to put it as mildly as I possibly can.
Frenetic. I like that word.
You know,
frenetic.
You know, I think that in the last election, every day you could probably update a little something.
Yeah.
And this one, I think it's hourly.
Oh, yeah. Maybe, yeah. And then thanks in part to Twitter, really. I mean, and the one candidate's constant use of Twitter.
Constant use of it.
That keeps things rolling.
It does keep things rolling. And it's a different one. And it's certainly a time where we're, I think, having trouble talking to each other about it more than ever, because it is such a polarizing one. And the role social media is playing. It's much easier to say something inflammatory if you're not looking at another human being's face, if you're just kind of dashing it off across a keyboard. So that's really the thing I've been pushing on this whole year, is like, let's be kind to each other. Let's treat each other like humans. But I think it takes a very different tone when we have we have very adult topics going on in our election this year. We have lots of accusations of sexual assault and sexual misconduct. We've brought that up on both sides, right? Because even like the actions of Bill Clinton have come up in the last debate. And so there's a lot of adult themes. And so it becomes difficult to talk to children, and it's hard to shield them from things when it's right there on the front page of the paper. It's right there on social media. It's right there on the news. It's right there in front of us. So we're joined now by our good friend Heidi Stevens from the Chicago Tribune to talk with us a little bit about communicating with each other, but especially with young people during this election. Hey, Heidi, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Heidi.
Hi.
Well, it's a big topic and it's a dangerous one, right? It's kind of a slippery slope, because we don't want to necessarily fib to our kids. But we do want to protect them. And sometimes we don't necessarily want, say, Trump to be the one to tell them the birds and the bees.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, God, no.
Everything he knows about race, he learned from Donald Trump.
Right. Right. So, you know, but it is interesting how a lot of topics that are very up in this election have, are cueing conversations. I know several people with young children who are, who have kind of had to have some difficult conversations with their children about, you know, little children, even about consent and about race and about class and things like that, that maybe they were just kind of thrown into, and their hand was kind of forced a little bit. So where do you fall on that, Heidi?
I think this is a hugely, hugely personal question, and every family has to decide, obviously, for themselves how to handle it. I do think that kids probably know more than we think they do often. I mean, at my kids' school, which is a kindergarten through eighth grade school, they're having a mock election, so they know, you know, sort of the broad outlines of what's happening anyway, even if we weren't talking about it at home. We are talking about it at home because we sort of just tend to not shield our kids from stuff. They watched both conventions with us on TV. They watched both debates with us. And it raises a lot of questions, but I kind of welcome those questions. I feel like it's a little bit of a privileged place to be, to get to decide whether your kids need to deal yet with race and entitlement and consent. A lot of kids don't have the luxury of not having to deal with those things.
No, that's a really good point.
They sort of live it every day. And I feel like, I have white middle-class kids who live in a relatively safe neighborhood, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have to grapple with the same sorts of issues and learn, right from wrong, and develop sort of a moral compass about these things, just because it's not staring them in the face the way it is for some kids.
Yeah.
I've actually put both of my children in a hermetically sealed bubble, and I don't plan on letting them out until November 9th.
Earmuffs, kids. Earmuffs until November 9th.
That's the problem. I'm not sure that's going to be our magic, day of all utopia.
Right, yeah, everything's not going to be better.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, I think we can't put the genie back in the bottle. I think we've kind of created space for dialogue that is not going to go away on the 9th. I agree with you. Well, I think it especially this election cycle has raised some really interesting challenges for parents of daughters.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I went back and forth on whether to show my daughter that original video that Hillary released a couple weeks ago, where she was showing Trump's words, over images of, young, not super young girls, but, tween and teen girls looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
With his gross words about, just body shaming stuff. And my first instinct was like, oh, I can't wait to show my daughter this and have a discussion with her about it. And then I thought, what about the damage it does to her, and the questions it's going to raise in her mind about, whether all sorts of men in her life are looking at her and girls her age and having those thoughts. And I thought, I'm not ready to introduce those questions into her head yet if they're not there. Yeah. They might be there, and we have a lot of conversations all the time about that stuff, but I wasn't ready to add another video to it just in case she wasn't thinking along those lines. So I ended up not showing it to her. But I wouldn't second guess, you know, a parent who had decided to. I think it's important to kind of face this stuff head on, and even as I say that, you know, to use your own instincts in deciding which things you're going to expose them to and which things you're not. But I don't think pretending it's not happening is going to be all that effective.
And also, it seems one thing I've noticed is that some of it you don't have any control over, because some of it's filtering its way into the school. So then your kid is coming home and saying, wait, what is this? Or this happened. I read something, I read two stories now about parents of boys the boys have come home and they've started saying things that, like, you know, I want to trump her, you know, relating to some of the comments that he made in that leaked audio. So, again, you know, that when that happens, obviously you don't have any choice. And right. You know, I think better certainly to hopefully get hold of it soon and hear about it and be able to intervene as a parent than to just sort of let it, you know, go wild on its own among the mouths of young boys and that sort of thing.
From the mouths of babes, yeah. Well, you know, that's an interesting thing, too, that I've seen a couple of parents that I know kind of grapple with. One friend of mine said something like, you know, I've been focusing so much on how I'm talking to my daughter that I don't think I've been thinking as much about how I'm talking to my son about these same issues, that I've been kind of putting this all on mm-hmm. her. And so she really kind of had to backtrack and think about how she's talking with her son about issues that a lot of times I think we just kind of push the side and we call them women's issues and we just kind of mm-hmm. keep them amongst us girls. But, mm-hmm. you know, really we need to talk about these things roundly with everybody.
Absolutely. And I think one of the really positive things that's come out of this disgusting campaign is the idea that more of us need to be upstanders and not just bystanders. And mm-hmm. I think that we need to teach our kids that early. And kids are semi-familiar with that. I mean, you know, you say the word bullying and most kids are going to roll their eyes because they've had 17,000 assemblies about it and handouts. And they know they're not supposed to bully. And they're starting to know that they're not supposed to be bystanders when there's bullying happening either. They're also supposed to be upstanders, which means that they, you know, cut it off. So if they hear, you know, quote unquote locker room talk, which is actually, as we all know, you know, feeding into rape culture, that they shouldn't just walk away or just not participate in it. They should actually cut it off. And so I think some of these conversations can be an opportunity to teach our boys and girls how to be upstanders, how to cut that stuff off when they hear it, whether it's about immigrants or people who practice a different religion than you do, or whether it's fat shaming, whatever it is, that speak up.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know what? We have a caller about this. I want to talk to him real quick. Hi, Sean. You're on WGN. You've talked to your son about this election?
Correct. Yes. Well, a lot. But he's in middle school. My daughter's in high school. He basically, because he's in middle school, he's learning a lot of choice words. And he's been throwing the T word around like it's nothing. Oh. And my wife and my daughter really, you know, confronted him on it this weekend. And he said, what's the big deal? It's not a big deal. And he really didn't see it was a big deal. And lo and behold, 2 hours later, they released the video. And they cut it all out. And we decided, oh, you know what, we're going to get onto a website. And we're going to show him exactly what Trump had said. And he saw how, like, almost violent that it could have been, mm-hmm. and that was a wake-up call. Not to mention, you know, for a 13-year-old, he's already formed a pretty strong opinion against Trump. Yeah. But boy, that really hit it home that it is a horrible word, but it can be used very aggressively, you know.
Sure.
And that was really a good moment. So in a way, in a weird, bizarre way, Thank you, Donald Trump, for being a schmuck.
That's a good bumper sticker to have for after the
game. I was going to say, I think you might have a side business making T-shirts saying that, Sean.
Well, you know, I think there's
Sean, thanks very much for the call. Have a great day.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
I think that, you know, he brings up, I think, a good point, and this is me being super optimistic, and maybe because it's such a nice day outside, but we could come out of this in some ways better, because I think we are being forced to have some difficult conversations with our kids and with each other, and a lot of them turn into horrible online argument discussions, but there are also good discussions going on, and perhaps, and this is honestly, I don't want to be completely partisan here. I think, you know, you have issues of honesty and you have issues of all kinds of things going on both sides. And I think perhaps we come out of this with a hope for elevating in things rather than staying down in the sewer. So
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right. A lot of the criticism I've been getting in emails this week, because I wrote about, Bill Clinton's womanizing earlier in the week. And a lot of the emails have been, I made a reference to how I think that a female president could help usher in some progress.
Yeah.
And a lot of people wrote, sarcastically, just like a black president ushered in racial harmony. Well, I think to your point, Rex, what's happening right now is not so much that race relations have gotten worse. It's that we're paying attention to race relations in a way that we weren't before. And so maybe that's what this election can do for us. I mean, police did not just start abusing African-American citizens during
the Obama years.
And we maybe just weren't seeing it because we didn't have social media. There weren't body cams. I mean, a number of different reasons, but it's not as though this stuff started with Obama. We just maybe are talking about it more. And I think that's sort of the same thing that you're saying. This stuff feels really ugly and divisive right now, but it's also because we just weren't talking about it as much before.
Yeah, I heard it compared to installing a light in the basement. Suddenly you don't know how to clean it up until you can see where the grime is, and then when you put the light in, you see what you need to clean up, what you need to fix, what you need to repair.
We have a lot to repair.
We have a lot of stuff to fix in this basement, my friends. Lots and lots. Probably the attic too, the whole house.
Yes.
Whole house. Lots to do. Heidi Stevens, thanks so much for being with us today and talking about some difficult stuff. We appreciate it. And, of course, we follow you on social media and enjoy your columns in Chicago Tribune.
Yes, Heidi's awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks very much. Have a great
day.
Weekend. You too. All right, my friends, we are going to take a little break and all that good stuff. We'll be back in just a bit. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy here on 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy. They will be coming back at 1 o'clock after the Wintrust business lunch. They are on location today, somewhere very exciting where it smells like pine trees. So we'll hear from them at 1 o'clock. Delicious pine. Well, we have been this hour talking about the election because I think at this point we're all just stressed out. No matter how you're voting, I think we're all stressed out and high blood pressure heaven, and there's a lot to it, and it's complicated, and a lot of people are writing about it. A lot of there's so many different takes. It's so interesting. If you Google a candidate name, an issue, any of those things, and just hit news, just look at Google News and look at how the different outlets will put a headline on that. And it's really interesting just to see that language. But I encourage you to, let's all make a point to look at a variety of news outlets. That's really important to get a well-rounded view of issues. We all have our favorites, but let's make ourselves see what other outlets are saying too. It's super important to do that.
I totally agree with that. And honestly, there's a complaint coming from a lot of people on the Trump side of the fence that we are ignoring a lot of the WikiLeaks documents that are coming out regarding Hillary Clinton and John Podesta's emails, et cetera. And I don't think that that's an unfair argument at all. I think that that is getting buried. Now, in part, it's getting buried because Trump keeps doing and saying things that are distracting everybody. But, there are issues in those emails that I think are of concern, of concern to a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters.
Like how to make risotto. That's a big
deal. Yeah, there was that. There was the risotto recipe. I don't think that I haven't seen anything coming out of those that was, something that is actually dramatically headline grabbing. But anyway, I do think that it's fair to bring that up.
Yeah, and there's a really interesting pieces. There was one in the Washington Post.
Yeah, the Washington Post did a great look at the two speeches that we mentioned earlier. The Trump speech, and then Michelle Obama almost simultaneously was giving a speech. And I actually just wanted to read this quickly because I think it really presents where we are in the election, in the campaign.
Yeah.
They wrote, the presidential campaign has been building toward all this day after day after day. The rhetoric has intensified, the charges and countercharges escalated, the issues have been reduced to asterisks, and the gulf between the Trump and Clinton coalitions has widened. Sunday's debate in St. Louis foreshadowed what was to come. Now there will be no turning back. Obama, meaning Michelle Obama's, was a scorching takedown of the Trump who has revealed in the Access Hollywood hot mic video a sexual predator who bragged about using his celebrity status to go after women. The impassioned first lady said that, no matter one's political affiliation, Trump's language is an affront to women and girls, and to men and boys as well. She pleaded with voters not to allow him to occupy the highest office in the land. Trump's speech was an angry and all-out defense against overnight charges of sexual assault by multiple women, coupled with a blistering attack on an establishment that he charged is led by Hillary and Bill Clinton, protected by a complicit news media, and so totally corrupt that it threatens the very future of the country. That's a very good summation, I think.
That's a good summation of yesterday. That was just one day. That was, in fact, in the span of 3 hours.
Sure. You could go an entire election without having that much drama.
Indeed. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke, in for Bill and Wendy. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. We will hear from them about 1 o'clock after the Wintrust business lunch. But my friends, there is indeed so much to talk about between now and then. As we were saying earlier, every hour we look up, the election narrative has changed, or at least more. What's the word I want? Gasoline has been added to the fire.
I was going to say
there's more hay on the haystack. No, it's a bonfire.
It's more Bernie.
It's not Bernie.
Yeah,
no.
Sorry.
It's like a tire fire is what it is, really. But, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier in the show about how we talk to our kids about all this stuff, because let's face it, there's stuff that's on the news every night that's coming out of candidates' mouths and that is being said about candidates. It's just not appropriate for all families, right? So we've been talking about that a little bit, and we heard from our good friend Heidi Stevens from Chicago Tribune. But we have a caller. Hi, Caroline, you're on WGN.
Thanks for taking my call. I love listening to WGN and listening to everyone's viewpoint. So you were talking about Donald Trump and the words that the things that he says, the stupid things that he says. And believe me, I am not defending that man. I have no idea who I'm going to vote for because I actually dislike both of them, but I'll figure that out. I will decide finally. But here's what frustrates me, okay?
Yeah.
Is that you keep talking about Donald Trump and how his words are beginning to filter into the classroom.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to give you a personal story.
Please do.
About 15 years ago, when my daughter was in fourth grade, that's when Bill Clinton was in office. Mm-hmm. And that's when that whole Monica Lewinsky scandal and the infamous cigar and all of that was in the news. And constantly on the news. So my daughter's in fourth grade, and one of her, one of the boys in her classroom started talking about it in great detail, and not just to my daughters, but to a couple other girlfriends as well. So immediately, when my daughter came home, she shared it with me, and I was furious, like any mother would be. You don't want your daughter learning about, sex like that in fourth grade. So I called the principal, raised the fuss, whatever. They talked to the boy and they said, he learned it from, learned it from the news, from his hearing his parents talk about it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's basically what's happening today. What Trump is saying is going into the classroom and everywhere. I mean, it's an everyday conversation, you might say. But we can't forget that Bill Clinton did the exact same thing 15 years ago. And what frustrates me is that the media is only reporting on what Trump is doing now, but what they're not realizing, I'm walking my 5 miles and I'm out of breath.
Well, good for you.
Good on you, Caroline.
Sorry, I'm like not that emotional. I'm just
winded.
Hysterical, but I actually did. I'm going to walk a little slower. But anyway, maybe I'm just getting really angry. I don't know. But anyway,
politics will do that to you.
There you go. Politics and, yeah, walking. But anyways, but we need to remember that is if Hillary Clinton gets into the office, that means that Bill Clinton is going to be in the office, too. He's going to be back in the White House. And I guess that just really frustrates me that the media is not being, I want to say, fair in saying Trump spoke like this. But you know what? 15 years ago, this is what Bill Clinton was doing. It's just not fair.
I think that came, yeah, I think that came up a little during the pre-debate kind of, what am I looking at? Like the pre-debate kind of looks and forecasts. Well, I think that you're right. That did come up a little bit, that very
well,
thing.
Well, that's the thing, a little bit. Now, forgive me. I really don't remember everything that happened with Bill Clinton. But I remember that he was disbarred. And he was disbarred for lying under, the oath of office. Right, but was that because of that scandal? I honestly don't remember. I just know that he's been disbarred. He can't practice law anymore.
I think it was a temporary. But you know what? We're going to fact check that one.
Yeah, but it was. I believe it was related. Yeah. It was related to the impeachment.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So that yes, that's definitely true. And I don't. I think you're absolutely. I mean, you know, you are bringing up. I mean, the similarities. I think between the topics that are being discussed. Yeah, I mean, and it's not good. And it wasn't good then, and it's not good now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It seems what I feel like, and again, like I said, I don't like Trump. Okay. But I'm so tired of the media constantly dissing him and talking about him constantly when you can rate in return, say, yeah, but you know what? The Clintons did this. And, you know, the Clintons have, you know, Bill Clinton's been accused of raping several women. And Hillary's, you know, kind of helped Bill cover that up. I just feel like more of this needs to be brought up instead of constantly Trump, Trump, Trump. I'm just saying. Just be fair about it. They're both horrible candidates, and neither one of them should be president of the United States, in my opinion. But I do think that the media should be a bit more unbiased.
Caroline, that's why I would like you to write me in as president, please. Rex Hupke for president.
Last name, please. Yeah.
That's Hupke for president. Well,
hey, listen, I'll stop thinking about politics, and I now have my candidate.
There you go.
I appreciate it. And again, thanks so much for letting me talk and give you my opinion.
Thanks, Caroline. Thanks for sharing it with us, and good luck on the rest of your walk.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you. I've got about 2 miles to go.
That's very impressive. Have a good day, Caroline. I'm really impressed. She's like, I am going to commit some acts of activism by speaking out on the radio, and I'm going to walk my 5 miles, and then it's not even noon.
So multitasking.
Caroline's on it.
Way to go,
on it.
Caroline.
All right,
like
my
that.
Friends, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to talk about something else that's enraging a lot of people, but it has nothing to do with politics whatsoever. Back in just a bit, Amy Guth and Rex Hupke here on WGN. WGN 720 WGN, Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. Thanks for spending your morning with us. We are most grateful to you for that. I hope that you are outside enjoying some of the sunshine at some point today because it is really lovely. It's a little chilly out there, but it's beautiful and sunshiny here in the Allstate Showcase studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. My friends, we have been talking a whole lot about the election, and we have been taking as many of your calls as we can. We only have so much time, but indeed, I'm sure if we all were to sign off on our grievances and air them, like if it was festive, right, where you air the grievances, right? If we were all to do that, we could spend the next 48 hours on the station just doing that if we had a chance, really. But I appreciate everybody for calling in and sharing your many points of view. I really appreciate diversity of opinion very much. But you know what? There is another man in headlines right now that is enraging a lot of people, and that is Bob Dylan.
Of all people.
Of all people. Mild-mannered, chill, peace, love, and Bob Dylan.
Yes.
The Nobel Committee has made a bit of a surprising announcement. That was yesterday. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. And they said it was because he has created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. And I am shocked and appalled, Rex Hupke, by how many people got so mad about that.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, I could understand if, say, some random 80s band had been like Aha was awarded the Nobel Prize for
Kaja
Literature.
Kaja Gugu gets
right,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Flock of Seagulls is this year's winner.
What was that guy's name? Lamal. Remember he had like the solo album for it?
Yeah, exactly. Milli Vanilli will be receiving this year's Nobel for Literature. But, I mean, it's Bob Dylan for Pete's sake. I mean, this guy is I mean, they don't get much more iconic than that. And
yeah.
I think certainly if you, whether you like, and people, I mean, I've never met someone who's sort of tepid on Bob Dylan. They either love him or they really can't stand him. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with his voice, which is very unique.
Right.
And some might say bad, but I find it very appealing and in its own kind of unique way. Right. And but take the voice away and you read his lyrics, and they are absolutely spectacular.
Right, because he didn't get the Nobel in crooning.
Right,
he
exactly.
got it in literature,
yeah.
and he's written more than 900 pages of lyrics.
Oh, my God.
And the Nobel is normally awarded, generally, to essayists, novelists, playwrights, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, one could argue, especially with the, you know, he's put some political, like woven some political threads in and out of his work, and they are quite lovely. They are quite beautiful lyrics. Like, even if you don't like the music, they're lovely. They're beautiful. I like Dylan. I like the music. But I was amazed. I looked at Twitter shortly after that announcement, just checked in just to see what was happening, what people were talking about, what was trending. And people were outraged, like outraged on levels I have not seen outside of politics
right.
about this. And I'm like, what's happening right now? You guys, focus, people, focus. We're talking about the, I mean.
Perhaps if I had written a epic work of literature in the past year and was thus denied the Nobel Prize because of Bob Dylan, then maybe. But otherwise, yeah, I didn't get that either. And maybe there's something I'm missing, but I just thought that if you look, I mean, it's a different decision. It's a different person to pick for that category,
yeah.
certainly. But if you look at the body of work, my Lord, I mean, it's just spectacular, and I don't see how you argue the what he has contributed.
Right. It's like Milli Vanilli.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Which is a great example. NPR had an interesting piece about this Nobel nod, and they make a really interesting point in that piece about how he is not someone who got started and kept going. He, in fact, has, like, it's been a series of breaks.
Mm-hmm.
He'll do one thing, stop, make a very clean break, come back reinvented. So
yeah.
his career is really a series of eras, which I think if you look at, if we shift away from literature for a minute and just look at music, I think that's a really interesting thing that a lot of artists with a great deal of staying power have done.
Yeah.
If you look at the Beatles, like very drastically different, you know, eras in Beatles music.
Oh, yeah,
if you look
yeah.
at Madonna has even done that.
I was
that.
Just going to say, he's the Madonna of Bob Dylan's.
He's the Madonna's of Nobel laureates.
Yeah.
One might say. But I think it was very interesting how people just really kind of lost their minds about that, which kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Rex, right? About outrage is the new normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we have to be outraged, and the default intellectual setting, I for a long time have said it's snark, but I think it's now shifted to outrage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to be angry.
We can't just
things.
Go, cool.
Yeah, and it's true. I could write a column about kittens, and there would be dog lovers who would come out of the woodwork to assail me.
Call you a kittenist.
Yes, a kitten, right, yes.
Pushing your yes. kitten agenda.
Yes, the radical left-wing kitten agenda.
Well, they are darn cute.
Yes, they're adorable.
I mean, there's that.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I agree. I think that, I mean, and again, it's something where you react. You say, Bob Dylan in literature, that makes no sense. And that's as deep as you've gone into thinking about it. And you let that, you have this easy way of picking up your phone or sitting at your computer and firing off your outrage. And so you do it without actually saying, well, wait, maybe I should go back and read some of what he's written or think about the impact he's had on society in a lot of different ways over the years.
Okay, if you could add one artist to this, if you could, like, have, if you, Rex Hupke, could have your own subcategory of Nobel nomination, you just had some, like, Nobel tickets to hand out, like golden tickets, who would you bestow one upon? Another musical artist with mad skills in the lyric writing department.
Oh boy, that's really tough. I like a lot of different kinds of music, but it might be Neil Young is a...
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he's a longtime
sure.
favorite of mine.
Yeah, that's a good one.
There are a lot of people in the hip-hop rap area that I think would be worthy to put in there also when you, again, are looking at voices that have come along and expressed something that people weren't paying attention to.
Hmm.
And I think that's something Bob Dylan did, too. You know, Bob Dylan, a lot of people in that era were writing about issues and things that people were not talking, kind of like we were talking about earlier, you know, with Heidi, like some things that we haven't been talking about
yeah.
that men may be shining a light on some things.
Yeah.
And you may dispute the way some people, right? Yeah, but
but nonetheless,
but the message that comes out of some of it is still very important. So, but yeah, I mean, just off the top of my head, Neil Young would be right. I'd be happy to see Neil.
That's a good
win
one.
Win a Nobel Prize.
Everyone's going to roll their eyes, but of course, I would hand mine to Morrissey.
Morrissey, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, look at that. I mean, that's another thing. And what I think is so important in music, now that we've transitioned into a rock and roll show, history of rock and roll show here, is that it captures something. And the Smiths, when I was growing up, man, did that that captured that angst and the, you know, sort of.
And it's subversive. I mean, it's the thing about Smith's lyrics is they're sticking it to the man.
Yeah, absolutely.
In their way, and not even like a system, but like an individual who's being, you know, oppressive or inappropriate or judgmental even.
Yeah.
And I think that spoke to a lot of us in the Gen X era.
Big time, yeah. I don't think the Smiths, and there might be one or two other bands, but in terms of when I hear that music, where that takes me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's about as direct a time-traveling device as I can get. And I think that's not just me, I mean, or you. That's a lot of people. So, again, that, to me, they did it. They captured that. I mean, I think Nirvana captured a lot in, you know, the 90s and, you know, when they were really in the grunge, you know, that grunge moment in time. I think those are important points. Those are markers.
Definitely. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing about music, right? It's like it becomes a soundtrack to a moment, to an era, the way you felt, what you aspired to in that moment. And I think, you know, grunge is a moment in music. And there was a lot of moments in music way before and way after. And I think what's cool about Bob Dylan is, you know, he jumped on a lot of those moments. He kicked off a lot of those moments. He had many different eras throughout his musical career. So like it or not, he's got the Nobel nod. And I think I didn't see one single person, in fact, tweet or post anything like, awesome.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah,
Bob Dylan
got that. A lot of negativity.
That was really surprising. But we might just be in that mindset. We might just be in a bad place until after the election.
Yeah,
that might just be a thing that we're doing right now. I think we can all agree, no matter how we're voting, we're all just kind of stressed out and ready for the election to just happen already. Right?
I think maybe our mantra needs to be, I'm going to refrain from commenting for the next like few weeks.
I've started using namaste like, just as a hey, go jump in a lake kind of thing. Someone says something awful and I go, namaste, because that works really well. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. We're turning things over at noon to the Wintrust Business Lunch Show. Get you all those business and technology headlines, all that good stuff. But still lots to do here today with us. You know, there is an interesting story that's floating around right now that just came out in the last 24 hours or so. It's about how a disability rights group is suing Uber, citing wheelchair access, which is really interesting, you know, a way to consider it, a thing to think about, really, because we think about Uber, it's anybody's car, you know, UberX, anyone can pull up. We have no control over what kind of car it is or how big or small or how accessible that car is. And so a Chicago area disability rights group said that the service did not provide enough vehicles that can handle wheelchairs. Personally, I don't know how you even necessarily hail a vehicle that particularly needs to be, you know, wheelchair accessible.
Yeah, it seems Uber would need to build something into its platform.
The app where you can say, I have this need, I need to, you know, because I don't even think you can necessarily differentiate when you need like an SUV or versus a small car. I don't even know how to do that.
Yeah,
so you can.
Yeah. I imagine if you want to get somewhat specific, you can. But this would be adding a whole new category to it, which I don't think that's a bad argument, you know, to make sure that you have, if you are serving as large a number of people as Uber serves, why not have that, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, a little bit earlier in the show, we were talking about how as like gloomy as this election is, that it is putting us in a place where we're having conversations where we had not had them in years past, right? Mm-hmm. And it's shining light on an important issues. And I think this is yet another topic, right? That we it's easy for you and I who do not use wheelchairs to not even think of that. And honestly, I had not even considered that.
Same here.
But now that I read about this lawsuit, it it's making me think about a lot of things, about buildings, about, you know, oh my gosh, that is a good point with Uber and other rideshare apps. How do you, you know, do all that? But there is a show right now that is on, it airs Wednesday, 7:30 Central on ABC. And it also kind of addresses some of these topics, which Indeed. I think is really interesting.
Yeah, it's called Speechless. And I think it is doing a great service, really, to helping people understand people with disabilities and what it's like to have a child with a disability, what it's like to be a young person with a disability. And it stars Minnie Driver, and it is hilarious, first of all. It is, I mean, on all other things aside, it's just a really funny show, and it's taken off very well. And Minnie Driver plays the mother, who is a fierce advocate for her son, JJ. JJ has cerebral palsy. On the show is played by actor named Mika Fowler, who also has cerebral palsy. And so I think it's really showing people a lot of things, and it's doing it in a funny way. And I believe we have Minnie Driver.
We do. We welcome now to the program Minnie Driver. Hi, thanks for joining us today.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for taking some time. We appreciate it.
Tell us about the show and what, you know, tackling this topic has really meant to you for doing the show.
Well, so the writer and creator of the show, he grew up in a, it's based on his, loosely around his life. He grew up with a family member who is a nonverbal CP, and he wanted to create something that I think was funny first and foremost, because there it is. Disability, special needs, whatever verbiage you want to use, and there are plenty of people who have an opinion about that. It is so negatively represented in the media, in the press, in entertainment, and I think comedy is a wonderful way to break down those walls. And this is a family who has a certain set of challenges. You know, they don't have any money. They have a child who has cerebral palsy. They move into a fancy neighborhood, into a really rubbish house where kids can go to a really good school, which I think a lot of families can relate to that in America right now. Certainly what it is to be challenged, and certainly how humor is such a needed respite from that.
Oh yeah, I think absolutely. I've had the opportunity and pleasure over the years to write a lot about people in Chicago with disabilities and about our special education system and all kinds of things. And so when I see your character being a fierce advocate for her son, JJ, I have seen that firsthand from more mothers and fathers, more parents than I can count, because it is, it seems it's a constant battle to make sure that your child has every opportunity that he or she deserves. And I think
I think every parent recognizes that. Every parent advocates for their child and wants them to have the best experience that they can. And I think when you have a child with special needs, you have to fight that much harder. Mm-hmm. And the world is not set up societally for people who use wheelchairs, but also disability, I think, makes able-bodied people very uncomfortable for the most part.
Yeah.
I think that it's hard to admit that, but I think people, they don't know how to interact. They don't know if somebody who appears or who is indeed nonverbal, that there is a person in there, that there is someone to be acknowledged. And I think kind of we need to educate more about how we can all interact. And that's how you create inclusivity. And I think the show is doing that by not proselytizing that we all have to somehow do something different, but rather laughing along with this family. I think will help able-bodied people feel less inclined to be nervous or not know how to behave.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it really also shows, because people have their own insecurity, people get around someone with a disability and they feel like they don't know how to act. And then, you know, you lose sight of the fact that you're around another human being. Just this is no different than anything else.
Exactly. You know, the Cerebral Palsy Foundation, who we've been working very closely with them, and they actually have this brilliant program and it's just called Smile and Say Hi. And it really is as simple as that. And when you're talking to little children, I talked to my 8-year-old, and Henry's hung out with Micah, and I've said to him, you know, Micah speaks very slowly on the show, but you listen, and you wait, and he uses a wheelchair. It's very difficult for him to stand. And Henry's whole interaction with him changed when we talked about the whole idea of, you don't have to know everything about a person. You can just smile and say hi to someone. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to even be deeper than that, but it makes everybody feel at ease. I have a friend who is a nonverbal cerebral palsy, and she has this beautiful, ostensibly therapy dog. And everybody loves the dog. And it was, when I first met her, I was like, oh, it's so great. Does the dog make you feel better? And she was like, no, the dog makes everyone else feel better.
That's hilarious.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that really is.
Well, you know, I was about to ask if this was a topic that was already something on your heart and mind before you started the show, or if the show is kind of deepened your connection to it, but it sounds like it might be a bit of both.
I think it's a bit of both. I think I have two nonverbal friends. One has ALS and one has cerebral palsy, and it has always been on my mind, and I've always felt, and it's such a normal response, and we have to get past it, of feeling guilty about how to deal with that and not really knowing what to do. And it is such an amazing thing for an actor. We're not curing cancer, we're entertainment. But to be able to make a show that has a social message in it that is not being forced down anyone's throat, but is easing a certain tension that I think exists. And to be able to do that on primetime network television, for me, I feel like it is a huge accomplishment, like, for an actor, because it's, you can't really take it very seriously. But sometimes I feel like this is a very useful moment. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think you're overstating that in the least. I think it really is. And again, having seen the importance of being around people with disabilities, understanding people with disabilities, and getting past our hurdles that we have, I think you all in this show are doing a real service, and I think that's fantastic.
I really appreciate that. I mean, we're having such a laugh doing it.
Well, and it's hilarious. It really is funny, and people should watch. I mean, if for no other reason, it's extremely funny. So watch it for that reason.
I think first and foremost,
let the other benefits come as they may. Well, thank you so much for coming on with us today. We really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you. And again, kudos to everyone. The show is Speechless. It's on Wednesdays at 7:30 Chicago time on ABC, and it is, as I said, really
super funny.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Minnie. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. All right, my friends.
Awesome.
She's so awesome.
Yeah,
she's so
nice.
And I love, you know, you could tell her passion connected to this topic, right? You could just tell. That's why I asked her that question, if she already had, strong feelings about this topic of disability rights and activism prior to doing the show, because it certainly seemed like it certainly came through.
Yeah, and it comes through in the show, too. It does. Yeah. The sincerity of what they're doing, you can tell.
Again, that's Wednesdays at 7:30 Central on ABC. The show is called Speechless. Be sure and check it out, starring Minnie Driver. Very, very nice lady. Very nice of her to talk to us today. So we're going to take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back in just a bit. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy. Back in a flash on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in for Bill and Wendy today. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you. Hope you'll have us back sometime. We enjoy hanging out with you, and I'm most grateful to you for spending part of your morning with us. We're getting ready to turn things over to the Wintrust Business Lunch with our good friend Steve Bertrand. But, you know, still, you're not done with us yet. Still more to do.
There's more.
You know, I really enjoy, we've talked about some heavier things because it's an election year, and that's what we're doing, at least for the next almost month. And then maybe we can take a breath. No, we won't take a breath after that. We'll still be complaining and stressing after the election for a hot minute. But, you know, I really enjoy sometimes just a good, completely weird story. There was one right after Hurricane Matthew made landfall in the U.S. about this stork that went and hid in a public restroom. Did you see him? Somebody walked in there to use the restroom. It was like at a city park facility or something. And there was just this giant stork just standing there, like hanging out by the sinks, and took a picture of this little guy, like, hey, what's up? Hey, hey.
That wasn't in North Carolina, was it? Because I don't think they let storks in, in restrooms.
No storks allowed in this bathroom. It was, I think, in Florida.
Okay, there we go. They're much more liberal with their bathroom policies.
But I enjoy those weird stories that just for a minute, not to take away from the big topics, but just for a minute are kind of like, wait, what? Like, man wrestled an alligator to propose marriage to who, what?
Yes, exactly.
And there was a proposal story that I saw about a guy who staged a car accident with his EMT friend, who went and got the fiancé-elect and said, there's been a terrible accident. You got to come quick. The guy had stage makeup on, pretending to be dead.
Oh, my God.
So that she would wail over his body. And then he woke up. You know, then he opened his eyes. He's like, just kidding. Will you marry me? I would say no.
That's a red flag. If you're feigning death as part of your proposal, that is a big old red flag.
I would say up until 10 minutes ago, I would have said yes. Yeah. But because of this, absolutely not.
Because I don't want to know what we're going to do on our wedding day.
That's if this is proposal, I don't even want to know.
What's up from here?
Absolutely not. I would not do that. But there's another one that I think is like kind of just weird and funny. And, you know, our friends in Japan, if you've never been, but our friends in Japan like, you know, gadgets, weird stuff. Sometimes there's just like good stuff that you can find in Japan. In fact, there's an entire neighborhood in Tokyo devoted to plastic food because a lot of restaurants in Tokyo and elsewhere in Japan have like a little window ledge inside of it looking at it kind of looks at, you can sort of like, it's like a visual menu,
mm-hmm, right,
but it's very realistic looking food. And this whole neighborhood devoted to manufacturing it with very like pushy salespeople out front, getting you to come in there.
Only the finest fake food.
Well, I finally went into one because I was just like, gosh, people are really, I'm just going to go into one. Gosh. But it was really like very specific things. Like you could get plastic matzo ball soup with or without herb pieces in the broth. Like, wow. It was very specific. There was nothing I could stump them with. But now this trend is happening. There's a great website called incrediblethings.com that I stumbled across, and there is a trend happening right now about putting this fake food into hair accessories. Think like the fascinator that one, like a lady would wear, like feathers and stuff, like a flapper might have, right? Mm-hmm. But replace that with a pile of spaghetti.
How have we not gone here yet? I mean, it's just brilliant.
I'm a little ashamed that we haven't. But Rex Huppy, I feel like you and I should personally see to this coming across here to the United States because, I mean, wearing an omelet on your head, there's something special about that. Here's a picture of a lady wearing a bow made out of fake bacon.
I think that would do well here, actually.
I just think that's weird and wonderful and great and...
How does the Midwest not already have bacon hair accessories?
But in the Midwest, though, it would be like a bratwurst,
yeah,
a deep dish pizza. It'd be like a Chicago hot dog. It would be not necessarily the most delicious, you know, not the most exotic or stylish food. I guess it's not the most the food of the Midwest. The iconic foods of the Midwest are not necessarily lending themselves well to being hair accessories.
She had her hair done for her wedding and then added a nice touch of cheese curd along the sides.
Blah.
A barrette with cheese curds attached.
See, that's why it hasn't caught on, because of cheese curds. That's why.
Dang it.
Well, Rex Huppy, it has been delightful to hang out with you today here.
Same here. It's
as we have been in for Bill and Wendy. But we're going to take a little break, get you the news and all that good stuff, and find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, that does it for me, Amy Guth, and Rex Huppke. We've been filling in for Bill and Wendy today. And, you know, we are now getting a visit from our good friend Steve Bertrand, who is on location surrounded by trees.
How about that? Not just trees, but Christmas trees of every sort you can imagine. I'm at Tree Time in Lake Barrington, and wow, that's all I can say is wow, it is beautiful here. And we'll do the business lunch from here, Bill and Wendy, a little bit later this afternoon. On the program, we're going to talk to Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation. You two cats know her, right?
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
And later, Helen Cameron, the owner of Uncommon Ground up in Edgewater. So looking forward to that. All of that coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.